This is Vis-a-Vis, a podcast series brought to you by the Alliance Program at Columbia University. Vis-a-Vis features conversations that challenge our understanding of key global, economic, and social issues by casting them in a transatlantic perspective. I'm Emmanuel Catan. I head the Alliance Program, a partnership between Columbia University and three French universities, Sciences Po, Paris Panthéon-Sorbonne, and École Polytechnique. Every episode, I sit down face-to-face with, or as we say in French, vis-a-vis, some of the most insightful thinkers on both sides of the Atlantic. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Every year, 1.3 million babies are born with congenital heart disease worldwide. One third of them need an artificial valve implant. These complex heart surgeries save hundreds of thousands of babies' lives every year. But valve implants are not a perfect solution. New valves need to be implanted every few years, which requires multiple operations that carry risks of complications and have deep impact on these children's quality of life. At Columbia University's Irving Medical Center, Professor David Kalfa's lab is dedicated to finding a solution to this challenge. To achieve this, some teams in the lab are developing stretchable polymeric valves, while others are focusing on transplanting living cell-based donor valves. In the latter case, one of the main challenges is preserving the tissue and its bioviability from the time it's harvested from the donor to the time it's implanted into the child recipient. In this episode of Vis-a-Vis, we're excited to speak to two young researchers from École Polytechnique who undertook an internship in Professor Kalfa's lab under the Alliance Program Exchange. Solène Léger is studying biophysics at École Polytechnique. She was born in Alsace and grew up in the Paris region, where she went to school. Her goal is to become a physician researcher, which is why, after training in basic science at École Polytechnique, an engineering school, she will be entering medical school next year. Lucie Chicot is a third-year student at École Polytechnique in Paris as well, specializing in biomedical engineering. Next year, Lucie will join the Translational Medicine Master Program at UC Berkeley and UC San Francisco. Her ambition is to create a biotech startup and bring next-generation predictive tools for female disorders. Solène and Lucie, welcome to Vis-a-Vis.
Thank you. Thank you for hosting us.
So let me start with a question I'd like to ask both of you, and maybe starting with you, Solène. I'd love to learn more about your background. If you can tell us maybe what motivated you to go to Polytechnique and why you thought that that was the best choice given your interest in medicine.
So I've been always interested in basic science in general. And as you said, I want to become like half a researcher and half a physician. And to do so in France, you have to do first a basic formation in science to then join the medical school. And so Polytechnique, because it's a school with like cutting-edge teachings and really huge opportunities like this internship in Colombia, was one of the best options for me, I think. Mm-hmm. And I'm also quite convinced that even if I don't do any kind of research, to be a good physician, it's quite important to have like an understanding of the basic science to then have like enlightened a clinical activity to just for like the evolution of medicine, like the robotization, the digitalization and extra. So yeah, it was a good option for me, I think.
And how did you come to learn about David Kalfa's lab here at Columbia?
So I was looking for like an internship abroad to first improve a bit my English and also have a kind of a translational project to bridge the gap between my engineering background and knowledge and the medical school I'm about to join. And so by just like talk with my teachers and former students, I've heard about the Alliance program and about these offers of internship. And so like the Kalfa labs just fit exactly this translational project. So yeah, I just like contacted him and he accepted it. And that was really cool then.
Wonderful, wonderful. How about you, Lucy? So what motivated you to apply and get into École Polytechnique, a very prestigious engineering school, of course? And again, how does this fit with your interest in medicine?
I think I've always been interested in sciences, but in high school, I did an internship in a pharmaceutical company, Lilly. Mm-hmm. And I discovered a new word, because I come from a family that is mainly physicians. So I think I've always had in my head the idea that I wanted to cure and help people, but discovering the pharmaceutical industry was an eye opener, and it changed a bit my idea. I wanted to be a physician, but then I thought maybe I could do something a bit bigger, and maybe studying broader science first would be very interesting to then have a higher impact. So that's why I did a preparatory program and then entered to École Polytechnique, where I think Solène and I did several very interesting and fascinating research projects. So that was very, very great. And so that pushed us to find translational projects, because we really understood that now, if you want to work in health, if you want to improve the treatments, the therapeutics for patients, well, you need to get a broader view of translation of projects. So it's not only biology, it's not only engineering, it's not only medicine. The goal is to conjugate all of these fields. And I think Polytechnique gave us a lot of tools to understand these separate fields, and we wanted to gather all this knowledge and apply it to a concrete project. And I think Dr. Scalfalab is exactly doing this kind of translational research, so we were very excited to join the project, and it's a very cutting-edge project, so it was a great opportunity for us.
Great. So let me turn to you, Solène, and get a bit of a sense also of what your research focuses on. So can you tell us a little bit more about your lab work and perhaps also some of the challenges that you've encountered and how you overcame them?
So as you mentioned, the global idea of the lab is to treat the children who have some congenital disease. The idea is to implant to them some living valve. And to do so, you have the main issue of storing them between the time when you just harvest it from the donor and the time you just implant it in the baby. Mm-hmm. And so to do so, you have mainly two solutions. The one that Lucy is working on, which is by a hot, preservation in a bioreactor and all. And the one I'm working on, which is about cooled preservation. Mm-hmm. And so to do so, we have several methods, and one of them is called supercooling methods. But then when you just cool your sample, you don't want to have some ice formations, for example, which could damage your tissue. So to avoid it, you have all process for the cooling process. But then when we rewarm it, basically they just say that all the things we try to avoid during the cool process just appear then during the rewarm step. So my goal is to use nanoparticles, which will be magnetic, and that could, when they are just in the magnetic field, really quickly rewarm and uniformly rewarm your sample to avoid ice formation extra and be a good sample to implant in your child. So that's why I'm working on. And the other part of your question was the challenge of this. It was quite challenging because this project is highly transdisciplinary. So I had to manage chemistry part to synthesize the nanoparticles, and physics part to do all the magnetic things and the heating system, but also biologic and surgery part to just harvest the hearts, etc. So it was quite challenging and exciting to just work with all this lab and try to coordinate this project.
Right. So without simplifying too much, it looks like the challenge of actually preserving heart valves, you deal with it by freezing them. And you, Lucy, you deal with it by actually keeping them warm.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So can you explain a little bit more? I think it's called normothermic storage. What does that entail?
Yeah. So the idea of the question of storage is keeping the viability of the tissue and the phenotypic aspect of the tissue, so the cells, the matrices. So when it's implanted, it will grow and self-repair. And this is a real breakthrough, in fact. So the idea is because, the cold and super cool storage are not yet functioning, we are trying to keep the tissue warm as it is in vivo. So we are trying to preserve the tissue in a bioreactor that will mimic the in vivo condition. So we keep it at 37 degrees.
Which is the body temperature.
Exactly, with a media that is made of nutrients and whole what you can find in your body that will supplement the tissue and keeping it alive. And also we're trying to add a mechanical stimulation. The idea under that is to keep, because the valve viability and functionality is linked with the biomechanical properties of the tissue. So if you keep that, the hypothesis is that you will keep it functioning after you implant it. Mm-hmm. So this is mainly the idea of what we're trying to do. We were talking about challenges. Well, our main challenge is that we understood that, we observed that, unfortunately, the biomechanical stimulation we are doing in our pumpless bioreactor is causing fibrosis. So the leaflet of the valve, so the valve is made of three leaflets, is becoming thicker, and it's kind of, we can observe a retraction of the tissue, which is problematic because you want the three leaflets to close it at the same point. Mm-hmm. So this is a problem, and so we are trying to there are two solutions, changing the biomechanical stimulation so that it changes the way leaflets are moving, because maybe if you don't do the good stimulation, then you're causing harm, and so the tissue reacts as if you were harming him. And the other solution is adding biochemical cues to maybe add you had a component to the media, and maybe it will prevent the fibrosis by acting directly on the cells.
Wow. So then I understand that you're also working with AI and that it enters into your research. What role does it play, and how significant, maybe over and above your research, how significant do you see the role of AI being in biomedical engineering, and how will it change the future of work that you and your colleagues are doing?
So on my research, I don't directly use AI, but a bit for imaging analysis, but not like, it's not the whole project about AI, but about the importance of AI in the medical field. That's really funny that you just talk about it, because with Lucy, we went in May to one AI conference organized by AWS Living System in medical field. And it was indeed about all this shift which is operating on the medical field, and how AI is just now everywhere and will be everywhere in every level of medical field, like from the drug discovery to the diagnosis, and also about like optimizing the different tasks. And so that was really interesting to see. And also you had like all the concerns about what is now the place of the physician with it. Do we have to reject it and treat it, or do we have to consider this as a mean to then have maybe more time with the patient, to maybe have more quality time for healthcare, and maybe then focus more on research, for example. And it's also a way sometimes to like fill some needs in medicine. So for example, for medical desert, it will be a way to have some remote medicine, or to have like a more personalized medicine, or maybe to diagnose earlier some disease. For example, we just discovered one of the startups which just works on diagnostic from just images from slices of histology, and then could maybe diagnostic from cancers, or I don't know, I think it's really like a powerful tool, but we really have to be aware. And I think it's really important that like the physician community just welcome it, but just be informed on it to then use it properly, and because they can't avoid that it's coming.
So, and about your training in AI, I mean, did at École Polytechnique, for example, did you have specific training in AI and large language models that is actually helping you, or is this something that you have to learn as you go along?
So in Polytechnique, you can choose your major, let's say. So I didn't choose like the AI subject, but actually it's something like really, really like spread in the like culture of the school, let's say. So I think we have a lot of conference, and I mean, we're using it, as I said, for example, even in biology for analyzing some stuff or just for coding, because it's like, for example, ChatGPT is just like a wonderful tool to just help you to be a good, like to code really well. But I didn't like personally took some classes about it. But I know that a lot of my friends in the school have some really cutting edge classes on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And staying on the topic of technology, Lucy, I know that you've been working on an editorial on the use of robots in congenital heart disease surgery. Can you tell us a little bit more about your work there and perhaps also the use of robots more generally in surgery?
Yeah. So Dr. Kalfa introduced the use of robotic surgery for treating pediatric heart disorders. So that's why he proposed us to work on this topic. And actually, Colombia is doing a cutting-edge project and has performed a really exciting project with robots. Robots have been used historically mainly in urology, because there are a lot of surgeries that are prone to the use of robots. And it's very helpful because it's less harmful. I mean, it's just two arms going through your stomach, so it's very convenient. It's then the recovery is much faster, and it's less harmful in terms of aesthetic. There is a much more beautiful result for the patient, and I think this is something less traumatic also for them. And so the idea was to then use it for cardiology. Again, if you use the robot, you don't have to cut the sternum, so it's very convenient. And now applying it to children, it's more difficult because you need, the challenge now is to do the miniaturization of the robotic tool. So there is the Da Vinci robot that is used currently, but the limit is, you can start surgery for children at 6 years old. So it's quite late, because when we're talking about congenital heart disease, it's at birth. I mean, we've seen Dr. Kalfa with Solène perform the surgeries. The baby was 5 days.
Wow.
So you can understand the challenge. It's very complicated. They are very complicated surgeries. Also, they are a bypass. So you stop the heart and you do an extra, you're introducing a circulation of the blood out of the body. So it's a very important surgery, and maybe adding the robots could improve those kind of procedures for the baby. So I would say the main challenge is going under the limit of 6 years old, but the idea under it is to perform surgeries that are less traumatic, safer, with faster recovery.
Going back to your research, Solène, and freezing organs, I'm curious to know whether the work that you're doing on heart valves may have applications in other fields of medicine, and particularly regarding freezing other organs, like kidneys, for example, or livers. Do you find the same problems of crystallization in these cases? And is your research, can your research have potential application?
Yeah, obviously. And to be honest, like for example, for kidneys, people have already done this kind of project in kidneys, mm-hmm. because it's a bit like easier, let's say, to work on a non like let's say, vital organ. And that's why we, like, then Dr. Kaffa has the idea to maybe apply it to the heart. So it has already been done for livers, kidneys, but every time with not exactly the same, like, issues, because, for example, here we're talking about, like, a valve. So just to you to have an idea, it's maybe less than 1 centimeter. And so it's really thin. It has to keep, like, mechanical properties. And so you don't necessarily have all this issue. You have other issues, but not these issues for other organs. So the process can be applied, but it has to be adapted to the size, to the mechanical properties, to the fact that, you know, when you harvest some organ, for example, here you need, like, to then cool it and preserve it in a supercooling solution. You need to flush it with a supercooling solution, and to do so, basically what we do, you use, like, the vessels of your body, and you use that, the fact that your heart will pump it through your body. But then when you don't have the heart and you want to flush the heart, it's another issue, so you also have to rethink all the process, extra.
Mm-hmm. I mean, similarly to you, Lucy, I'm wondering whether the methodology that you're applying, the normal thermic storage, could that apply to other organs as well, or has it been used in case of other organs?
Well, historically, when you think about organ transplant, you think about cooling organs, because the idea under that is to make the metabolism slower, so kind of freezing the organ. The idea under normal thermic storage is to mimic the in vivo condition, as I said before. And yes, that could be excitingly applied to other organs.
I think it's all. It does already exist for the liver, for example, because I've attempted to one, like, heart transplant, all the process. And, you know, when you have a donor, like, you have several teams, one which will take, like, the heart, but one which will take the lungs and the liver, extra. And for the teams which has taken the liver, they were this kind of bioreactor that's keep it, like, in the with the good metabolism
for several hours or days,
No, I think it was
I don't remember
the number of hours, but just the time of the, like, commute, let's say, between the donor, which was in Ohio, and the recipient who were in, I don't remember, but, like, let's say in New York City or something like this.
Yeah, but this idea was is now emerging, and we have my supervisor, who is a MD PhD candidate, she had, like, incredible results, and she was able to maintain the viability up to 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to build a bioreactor that is better than having a cold storage, because cold storage is functioning. I mean, for heart transplant, for example, it's perfectly working. So it's a solution when cooling it's not working, actually.
So would you say that a bioreactor is a little bit like a placenta, that the organ is within, you know, a sort of in vivo environment?
Well, the idea, it's quite similar. And I think, but you have other difficulties, because you don't want something that is too big. You want something that is off the shelf, that is, as I said, pumpless, not too expensive, because then, this is a challenge of making medicine affordable also. And you have the question of contamination, because it's outside of the body, so it's more prone to bacteria contamination, fungus contamination also.
Mm-hmm.
You have also the question of immunogenicity. I think it is it's complex, so it's other challenges, but it's very exciting to see that it's, at the moment, there are promising results.
So I'm curious to know, because you both, you know, have been at École Polytechnique, and this is where you're still studying until the end of the year, I guess. And you've been here in New York at Columbia University for the past few months. How do you compare the context in which research is conducted in France and the United States? From, obviously, you have your own window of, you know, perception on these issues, but from your own vantage point, how do you see differences and similarities? Maybe so then.
I would say that I think that here the research is much more valued and respected than in France. Like in France, expect like few like main center in the main city, like Polytechnique or like Ulm in France or etc.
Ulm, you mean École Normale Supérieure?
École Normale Supérieure, sorry. Mm-hmm. Being a researcher is first not really well paid, and you don't have like the respect of the society, or just not of the whole society, let's say, of the politics, etc. So here it's really something, yeah, it's valued. And so it's really pleasant to just evolve in this and have a lot of funds to do like huge scaled projects, let's say. And here I think it's really also international. So you have all these people from all around the world who just bring their own knowledge. So I think it's like a wonderful atmosphere to just do some research here. But maybe it's a little bit changing now, so I don't know.
What do you think, Lucy?
Yeah, at first I was amazed by the means. For me, it was incredible to see that if you wanted to do a clinical trial, it was possible. If you wanted to do some transplantation on animals, it was possible, and it was possible within 2 weeks. And for me, this is something that would have been not possible in France, I think, because we have less means financially. And I was also amazed by the mindset. I think what I find very great here is the fact that people are very motivated and are very supported by their supervisors. Like, if you have an idea, go for it. And if you fail, well, good for you. At least you've learned. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I find very, very nice. And I'm very glad I had this experience of research here. Mm-hmm. Because in France, when we did maybe the research project, we understood that people had administrative difficulties, that financially it was more difficult. And so it's maybe less valued. And so
yeah, I think in France, the research is less attractive than here. Mm-hmm. I mean, here, if you say, yeah, I'm a MD, PhD, for example, you're just like really the boss in France.
Right.
If you, and it's something that people want to do. And here, for example, a lot of people in the lab of CALFA are just making a kind of break in their medical school or whatever residency just to do some research because it's really valued. Whereas in France, if you do it, people will say, oh, great. But then they will say, but you're crazy. I mean, like, it's not really well paid. And so why don't you go to a private company or something like this? And so you have to be really like passionate, let's say, to do some research. So maybe you hesitate more to do fundamental research or to do this kind of break maybe sometime in your career. Whereas I'm really convinced that it's such an important thing to have some knowledge of wild, like basic science to just, yeah, tackle the different stakes of our world, I think.
Yeah, I think it completely changed the way we understood research. I think before my internship, I was a bit afraid of making a PhD because I thought, oh, this is a very long commitment. It's a journey. Well, I'm sure now it's a journey, but I feel like I'm reassured because I understood what you learn from it. The scientific process, the autonomy, the fact that you tackled an entire project by yourself from the scratch. So this is something really exciting, I think.
And what is the next step in your process, Lucy? Tell us a little bit more about what you're going to. So you'll be in California for 1 year for a master's degree.
Yeah, I'm doing. It's a master of translational medicine. Basically, it's a mix between a biomedical engineering program mixed with courses about public health science and also business, about the business of biotech and entrepreneurship also. So I'm very excited because it's jointly given by UC Berkeley and UCSF. And during the year, we'll conduct a capstone project with a startup from the Bay or a service from UCSF, which is a great hospital also. So I'm very excited about that. And I think it will depend on the project I will be carrying there. And then maybe a PhD in the translational biomedical engineering. And then we'll see maybe an entrepreneurial venture or going through the biotech industry.
And do you see yourself sort of straddling the Atlantic and still working in an international context?
Or? I hope so. Mm. I think I have I'm deeply rooted in France. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy my country, but I also love being here. And I think it's very interesting to make the most of these exchanges and to build a strong relationship, to share our knowledge, because the goal of that is to advance medicine and to find new diagnoses, find new therapeutics. Mm-hmm. So yeah, maybe. I don't know.
We'll you've got time to decide what you end up doing. How about you, Solène? What is next for you when you?
So next year I'm gonna go to medical school, as mm-hmm. I said. So it's a kind of gap. So I'm gonna go in like third year of medical school, mm-hmm. which is like when you half in the hospital and half in class. And after 4 years of that, I will have national exam to go into residency and have my specialization. And meanwhile, I will try to, like next year, I'm also going to do biostatistic master. And I will try to keep a research activity, maybe not directly because I have something to learn first about the clinical things. But I really want to keep like the both activities, and here it's really it was an amazing experience for me because I just had a lot of model here in the US of MD PhD of like people who just love the clinical aspect but also care about some science, and maybe it's a little bit more rare in France to have this kind of model. So yeah, I don't know if I would work here, but at least I hope I will continue to have some project with people here. And even like Dr. Kaffa last week just proposed us to maybe continue to have a kind of collaboration with him, so maybe.
wonderful. That's definitely a sign of success. So Len and Lucy, thank you so much for sharing your insights about your extraordinary work in Kalfa's lab. Extremely inspiring, and we wish you much luck and much success in all your endeavors. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Vis-a-vis is brought to you by the Alliance Programme, a partnership between Columbia University, Paris 1 Panthéon Sorbonne, Sciences Po, and École Polytechnique. This podcast is produced by Rachel Kahn and Georgia O'Neill, and I'm Emmanuel Catan. Special thanks to Esther Jackson and her colleagues at Columbia Libraries. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on your podcast platform. If you're interested in learning more about the Alliance Program and how we support academic exchanges, research, and collaboration between the US and France, please visit us at alliance.columbia.edu or follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much for listening.